se va a parar. Por eso que en toda la República del Paraguay, ante todos los sectores afectados, la organización del 26, estamos absolutamente seguros que va a ser un éxito total.
Fueron las palabras del senador nacional Luis Alberto Wagner, comentando los motivos de la huelga general organizada para el próximo 26 de marzo en Paraguay.
En Estados Unidos, la coalición ANSWER desplegó una gran manta frente a la Casa Blanca el miércoles 12 de marzo para repudiar el uso del dinero del pueblo para financiar neonazis que han tomado el gobierno de Ucrania después de un golpe de Estado. Durante la protesta, el primer mandatario se reunía con el primer ministro interino de Ucrania, Arseniy Yatsenyuk. Brian Becker es coordinador nacional de la coalición Actúa Ahora para poner fin a la guerra y al racismo. Él dice que la reunión fue orquestada para mostrar apoyo de Estados Unidos a un gobierno que ha llegado al poder a través de un golpe de Estado y, más importante, un gobierno que tiene en la mayoría de sus puestos a líderes de partidos neonazis y fascistas. Becker añade que fue Victoria Nuland, la asistente del secretario de Estado bajo el liderazgo de John Kerry, y los aliados de Estados Unidos en la Unión Europea quienes hicieron los trámites necesarios para cambiar el régimen de Kiev. Becker dice que Estados Unidos busca incorporar a Ucrania a la Organización del Tratado del Atlántico Norte, la OTAN, para después instalar una base militar junto a la frontera de Rusia. El coordinador nacional de la coalición ANSWER señala que es importante notar que Rusia no tiene bases militares en el mundo excepto una en Siria. Becker dice que Rusia, al igual que China, sus bases militares están dentro de sus territorios, mientras que Estados Unidos cuenta con 1,000 de ellas, porque busca neutralizar a Rusia para así consolidar un mundo unipolar donde pueda tomar todos los recursos naturales de los países que quiera sin pedirle permiso a nadie. Actualmente la coalición ANSWER está lanzando una campaña de correos electrónicos a la Casa Blanca exigiendo que no se dé ni un centavo del dinero del pueblo a ese tipo de fascistas en el gobierno ucraniano. Entre los grupos extremistas más sobresalientes de Ucrania, apoyados por Washington, están el partido Svoboda y el sector derecho. Además de reunirse con el presidente Obama, Yatsenyuk también dedicó tiempo para intercambiar impresiones con Jan Boehner, republicano y vocero de la Cámara Baja del Congreso. En tanto, activistas anotan que la maquinaria propagandista, promovedora de guerras y ventas de armas, continúa haciendo su trabajo para facilitar un posible retorno a la Guerra Fría. En Los Ángeles, yo soy Fernando Velázquez.
Las protestas violentas que realizan desde hace un mes sectores de la oposición venezolana, conocidas localmente como guarimbas, se realizan principalmente en sectores de clase media. Las guarimbas se destacan por los levantamientos de barricadas, los enfrentamientos con la Guardia Bolivariana con bombas Molotov y disparos contra venezolanos que intentan despejar las calles y permitir el paso.
Al este de Caracas, el municipio Chacao, gobernado por la oposición, es una de las zonas más afectadas. Los comerciantes calculan sus pérdidas, que le han dejado un mes de tranca de calles y violencia. En esta farmacia, por ejemplo, la fachada fue destruida por el vandalismo. Muchos de los medicamentos han escaseado. Dicen que los distribuidores no han podido llegar.
Prácticamente ya al mediodía, como a las 2:30, que uno empieza a notar, así que ya van a empezar, ya nos retiramos. Cerramos y nos vamos.
Las guarimbas se llevan a cabo en municipios y urbanizaciones que agrupan en su mayoría a opositores, quienes convocan a través de las redes sociales a sacar los objetos viejos, en muchos casos trancándose ellos mismos.
Una de las primeras cosas es que la mayoría de los vecinos no están de acuerdo con las protestas de este tipo. Una de las cosas que esperábamos era que las protestas fueran pacíficas, que fueran organizadas, que se hicieran dentro del marco de la Constitución, pero eso no se ha cumplido, especialmente aquí en Altamira.
La logística para construir las guarimbas se realiza incluso bajo la complicidad de algunos vecinos. Las trancas también se realizan con árboles talados, carros en llamas, basura, mobiliario público y alambres. Unas 5 personas han muerto al intentar abrir las vías, mientras otras 2 personas fallecieron al ser degollada por un alambre colocado en la vía pública.
Eso no es ninguna manifestación pacífica. ¿Cómo tú crees que manifestación pacífica es?
La Defensoría del Pueblo en Venezuela ha calificado el modus operandi como trampas humanas.
La Plaza Altamira del municipio Chacao, al este de la ciudad de Caracas. La mayoría de las personas que viven muy cerca de este lugar es de clase media alta. Este sitio ha sido centro de operaciones por los grupos violentos. Recientemente las autoridades incautaron en este lugar gran número de productos que son utilizados por los grupos violentos para generar las guarimbas y trancar las calles.
En el operativo fueron incautados un arsenal de ropa, remedios para el estómago, casco y escudos improvisados. 11 personas fueron detenidas tras el allanamiento realizado en el municipio Chacao, gobernado por el alcalde opositor Ramón Muchacho, acusado por el presidente Nicolás Maduro de no tener carácter al no controlar la violencia en su municipio.
Más que un muchacho, resultó un incapaz, para no decir otra cosa, porque hoy acabamos de descubrir, también allanamos cerca de la Plaza Altamira un local y conseguimos todos los elementos para la violencia. ¿Y el local de quién es? De la Alcaldía Chacao. ¿Y quién lo protege? Funcionarios de la Alcaldía Chacao.
El Tribunal Supremo de Justicia venezolano ordenó a los alcaldes opositores a realizar las acciones y utilizar los recursos necesarios dentro de la Constitución para evitar que se coloquen obstáculos en la vía pública. Teófilo Griffin, Telesur, Caracas, Venezuela.
Estados Unidos, la huelga de hambre de más de 700 migrantes encarcelados en una prisión de Tacoma, Washington, ha sido declarada para repudiar las condiciones del penal, la explotación de la fuerza de trabajo de los detenidos y una demanda para poner fin a las deportaciones. Enrique Morones es fundador y presidente del grupo Ángeles de la Frontera.
Protestas contra la violación de derechos humanos aquí en Estados Unidos, la huelga de hambre ahí con nuestros hermanos y hermanas en Tacoma. Cruzamos de Tijuana a San Diego porque, como saben ustedes, también vinieron muchos soñadores para cruzar el día de hoy de regresar a Estados Unidos. Entonces, este movimiento contra las deportaciones y las leyes que no tienen justicia es a nivel nacional. Desde Washington State hasta aquí con Baja California y California, la gente está protestando y no vamos a parar hasta que tengamos justicia.
¿Y qué es lo que obstaculiza el avance de la justicia? ¿Cuál es el problema mayor?
Pues lo que están haciendo esas personas con huelgas de hambre, con la protesta de hoy, las personas que se entregaron a inmigración para regresar, que pasó hoy en la mañana, todo esto va a ayudar en la cual la gente sepa lo que está pasando aquí en este país, porque hay mucha gente aquí en este país que no tiene la menor idea de lo que está pasando, la separación de las familias, las deportaciones injustas, que no hay línea en la cual la gente se puede formar para aplicar por documentos. No sabemos qué acción va a ser la acción que causa la diferencia. Por eso cada acción, con que sea pacífica, es bienvenida. Ayer en el Parque de la Amistad, con 200 familias viéndose en el muro. Hoy, las 200 personas que vinieron de todo el país a estar aquí en la garita con Tijuana. 250 personas en Tijuana que viajaron de todas partes de México para regresar a Estados Unidos. La huelga de hambre de 1,000 personas en Tacoma, Washington. Todo eso está pasando ahorita. Y hay otras acciones y otras actividades que vamos a continuar a hacer hasta que el presidente Obama cumpla con parar las deportaciones y darnos leyes justas de migración. Porque ya sabemos que el Congreso está perdido. Ellos no van a ayudar. ¿Para qué seguir haciendo la lucha con ellos? Vamos directamente con el presidente. Él puede tomar muchas de estas acciones él mismo. Él sí puede parar las deportaciones. Él sí puede unificar a muchas de estas familias sin el Congreso. Presidente Obama, ya es tiempo que cumpla.
¿Y no piensas tú de que Obama no quiere tener problemas para las elecciones presidenciales porque quiere el Partido Demócrata que Hillary Clinton ocupe la Casa Blanca?
Pero esa historia ya se contó. Ya no pueden continuar a decir eso. Pues, hubo un tiempo en el cual podríamos decir, pues está tratando de trabajar con el otro lado, con el Partido Republicano, etcétera. Eso pasó hace 2 millones de deportaciones. Han sido 2 millones de deportaciones, demasiado. Tenemos que parar con todo esto y el presidente tiene que actuar en lo que nos ha dicho que es lo que él quiere hacer. De parar las deportaciones, de darnos una reforma. Sabemos que no tiene el poder de hacer todo, pero sí tiene el poder de hacer mucho. Puede pasar DACA, puede pasar el acto del sueño, puede parar las deportaciones. Esto puede ser una orden ejecutiva, ya los abogados lo han confirmado, derechos humanos lo han confirmado, ya es tiempo que cumpla. Entonces, posiblemente con la huelga de hambre, con la acción de los soñadores del día de hoy y ayer, puede ser la diferencia. Nunca sabemos cuál acción va a ser la diferencia, por eso vamos a seguir luchando todos para justicia para los hermanos y hermanas migrantes.
Emma Lozano es pastora de la Iglesia de Alberto en la ciudad de Chicago.
Nosotros estamos exigiendo que utilicen al presidente su autoridad, aunque el Congreso está paralizado para extender la acción diferida a los padres de Dreamers y los padres de niños ciudadanos para que no se separan y reunificar a los las familias que se encuentran ahorita en peligro por, y que tienen ciudadanos allá en el otro lado, en México o en el otro lado de la frontera.
En Los Ángeles, yo soy Fernando Velázquez.
Hemos llegado al final de otra edición del Informativo Pacífica. Nuestro agradecimiento a Telesur de Venezuela, a la Asociación Latinoamericana de Educación Radiofónica, ALER, y a todos los medios que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre del director del proyecto, Fernando Velázquez, se despide Norma Martínez.
Los invitamos a visitar nuestra página blog en pueblossinfronteras.wordpress.com, donde podrá opinar y encontrar más detalles sobre las noticias de Estados Unidos, América Latina y el mundo desde una perspectiva progresista.
And up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, it is Bathrobes Piers Broadsides, 2 hours of fun and games and lots of interviews, mostly from the last 2 or 3 weeks, with me. I'm Robert Norris. I've been out on the streets tending a number of protests and passing on my experiences and my interviews to you. Today is the 13th of March. It's a Thursday evening, and I invite anyone who wants to call in at 427-3772. 427-FRSC, here we are at Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. Stay tuned.
Who owns the land? Who owns the a question. Who owns a land? Ecocide? Genocide? Where is home? Ecocide? Genocide? Where is home? Ecocide? Genocide? Where is home? Ecocide? Genocide? Where is home?
And indeed, who owns the land? So, welcome to Bathrop Spears Broadsides. You kind of got the information if you've been listening for the last 5 minutes about where to call. But again, the number is 831-427-3772 if you'd like to call in with updates, questions, comments, whatever. This is a community radio station. I try to focus on civil rights issues in Santa Cruz. And if you have one, or have you seen one, or you think one should be raised that's not being discussed, well, you have the option to call in and talk about it. On Sunday, when I have a morning show at 9:30, I will be having a phone interview with a sharp-tongued poet and activist called Peter Marin. He's been on my show before a couple years back. He's a Santa Barbara guy. He got a big spread in this month's Street Spirit, which hasn't been seen much in Santa Cruz. We used to have regular distribution here, and now it isn't even in the library. But if you want to see that issue, you can talk to me. I may have a hard copy or two. Or you can go online to The Street Spirit, and you'll find the last year or two of Street Spirits online. It's a publication that has some really good stuff in it. It's gotten smaller over the years because the funding has been cut back by the American Friends Service Committee, which puts it out up in the Bay Area. The editor is Terry Messman. He's been doing that since his homeless activist days, when actually the two of us were arrested together here in Santa Cruz in 1992. Never convicted, but arrested for occupying a building, which... which actually was, we saved it from being demolished, and it became, I guess, single occupancy for families. Actually, it doesn't sound right. It was called the Heiner House, previously the police station, and it went to some other use for poor, lower-income families or women. I'm not quite sure what its present status is, but it was a successful direct occupation in the same way that Homes Not Jails in Oakland, which is the group that Terry Messman and others spearheaded, which they would take over abandoned property, improve it, and then demand that it be opened up for use by homeless and poor people. And we're quite successful in a number of cases. One famous one was the occupation of a building that turned into a community center. He still publishes Street Spirit. Street Spirit has the current issue of the Peter Marin interview. Peter knows a lot about what's going on in Santa Barbara. He's an outspoken guy. I consider myself outspoken at times, but if you listen to me a lot on the station, it's probably the same old yada, yada, yada. You're familiar with it if you're a regular listener. I have sort of some pretty strong and persistent views about the local politicians, about local liberal groups that claim to be doing civil rights work, like the ACLU or the Anti-Racism Coalition, or city council members like Michael Posner and Don Lane on the leftish side of the right wing. So you know what I think. But he's got some views that are pretty strong. He's particularly hostile to the notion that social services are a road out of homelessness for homeless people. It doesn't mean he doesn't think they shouldn't be there. It means that he thinks they are a way of perpetuating homelessness because real solutions like housing are not being tried, in spite of all the blather about that 180-180 program and housing first and all that stuff. There's no real fundamental program being initiated that would address issues. Instead, we have criminalization, downtown ordinances driving away musicians, performers, increased policing, DA's Bob Lee's planned opening of offices downtown, to go after the so-called 100 chronic offenders, and he's going to post their pictures all over town. We should be posting his picture and those of his cronies in crime, which his crimes are violations of civil rights, which are much more serious than somebody sitting next to a building or sleeping outside. It's not just much more serious. They're real crimes, whereas distinguished from survival behaviors being labeled or jacketed as crimes so that people can get rid of people they don't want. Gentrified neighborhoods being the objective. So last time I was playing some interviews at the from the Wednesday protest, which we've been doing almost every Wednesday for the last 4 weeks. We missed one day because it was raining. We being Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. This is in front of the coffee roasting company downtown, publicizing the fact that certain businesses have a policy of no backpacks, and yet they allow student backpacks, and it's a blank check to discriminate against and discourage homeless people with big backpacks, even if they have an outside area, even if there's plenty of room. And it's a nasty policy. It's a nasty kind of worldview, a sickness, a miasma, or kind of swampy thing that has taken over Santa Cruz, I feel, in some respects, or is threatening to do that. Saw it this last summer with Cruzio's bigoted denial of services to Dan Madison, also known as Sean Deluge, after he had paid $300 to get a workstation there. And that we protested outside the Cruzio. We weren't able to change their minds. We weren't able to get a lot of support, but we passed on the word, and I'm continuing to do it, I think. Discrimination and bigotry is simply a bad thing in Santa Cruz against homeless people. And those who do it should be exposed and should be held accountable for it. Anyway, here's some more from that particular, from a protest a week ago. We actually had one yesterday as well, and I'm going to play some from that. But first, from a week ago, and then perhaps more recently, there also was a protest on Tuesday supporting the Santa Cruz 11. That's the final four of the Santa Cruz 11 are still facing 4 years in prison, potentially, in order so that Bob Lee can fluff up the Wells Fargo banks, getting their good graces. And his motivations are really unclear to me. I guess he doesn't have any real political opposition. He's running unopposed for district attorney in this next election. I guess it's... you might say he's got an idea in his head and he's running with it. Maybe he's feeling defensive because the judges, well, at least one judge, Paul Burdick, has already sanctioned his district attorney's office for withholding evidence, contempt of court. Negligence, if not malice. And that was the case of Rebecca Young, who was the assistant district attorney in charge of the Santa Cruz 11 case, of which I was a part until finally, after a year, they got rid of, they dismissed charges against seven of us because they had no case. Their only case was they wanted to suggest that because we were a part of a protest where some people vandalized at a later time, we were responsible for that because we were in the Wells Fargo building. And, of course, so were a lot of other people, several hundred, I would say, during that three-day period right after as the Occupy movement, right before it was crushed by the Santa Cruz Police Department and homeless people sent crawling off in all directions by Chief Vogel's police force. There was a kind of a phone-in to Bob Lee's office last Tuesday encouraging him to drop the prosecutions. First, it started up at UCSC, and then it went to the town clock. And a number of us went there, and you'll be hearing some interviews from that particular protest as well. Call-in number is still 427-3772. I repeat it because I would love to hear other voices than mine and taped voices. But, some of those voices are worth hearing anyway. So let's listen in and, well, maybe hear some other voices from the actual live voices. That's up to you guys and gals out there.
Sir William Blake, you have had another conversation with the officer who continues to stand across the street. That's Officer Wilson, observing us.
Because she was sitting against the building, and I took her picture. She said she wasn't, but it's on camera. And I said, look, if I do what you're doing, I get a ticket. She says, well, I wasn't against the building. I said, well, that's not what the picture shows.
Picture is worth a thousand words.
Exactly.
This creature saying no.
And what William Blake, or Blake is referring to, he's one of our most enthusiastic Huff activists, is the fact that we had, at one time, there were five police officers surveilling this relatively small protest in front of the coffee roasting company from their vantage point near camouflage across the street, just standing there. I think then it was reduced to two. I may be confusing a prior protest. We've had three so far, and they all kind of merged together in my mind. But there was indeed Officer Wilson, who's a woman I've had mixed experiences with. I actually filed a commendation, I think, in the first protest because she and Sergeant Bush were able to defuse a situation with a very upset homeless person who didn't like one of our signs and torn it up and seized it out of the hands of one of the protesters and was threatening to come and do more, and I had to go and essentially threaten to, you know, file a charge against her if she didn't cool it. And she was, you know, ranting at me, and apparently she has more respect for badges and uniforms, or maybe, you know, it's hard to say. The threat of force and fear does have an impact on people, myself included. And she eventually came up, shook hands with us, and I commended Wilson and Bush for doing this. I wrote a letter to the chief saying, good work, you two. I'm glad you're actually doing a specifically good job in this case. I want to give police credit, anybody credit, frankly, when that kind of thing happens. We have a caller. My goodness. Could this be the omen of a lot of calls? Who knows? Well, you're on Free Radio with Robert. How's it going?
Good, Robert. How are you doing?
Hanging. I'm getting into it.
We all have to hang in here because this is very important. Hey, I talked to you briefly on the phone a week ago or so, talking about the ISS or ISSP, the Interface Satellite Shelter Program.
That's the one that kind of the small program that were seven churches kind of helped 20 people each, or I should say 20 people get helped by a rotating group of seven churches.
Right. Well, I was talking to a friend of mine. He says that they're kind of having a hard time getting funding for their group service. I just, how do I say it? We as people of this land and the people who are in need, I think it's important that people support such things. I mean, sometimes when people put interfaith on things, that kind of, some people don't want to support that, but the need is so huge. I know that the Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom really cares about people and what happens to them at nighttime and daytime and everywhere they go. So I hope that your listeners would, you know, consider helping out. I guess they could probably find it on the internet. I'm not sure. I don't have a computer or anything. But and also, I saw your protest outside of the Santa Cruz Roasting Company a while back. You guys were out there letting them know that you were not happy with their discrimination and their policies of the downtown Merchant Association, I guess.
Backpack discrimination in at least the four cafes and others too. Yeah.
Yeah, I see. Yeah. Well, you know, we're supposed to be able to have freedom of movement and freedom to do things and even the right to assemble with the proper guidelines, I guess, or permits and such. So just keep doing the good work you do. I mean, you know.
Are you homeless yourself, caller, or are you indoors?
No, I don't have a home. I don't have anything, I mean, except for my clothing and just a little bit of money. I don't receive any money from government. I worked with the homeless for about 13 years through a local mission there in Santa Cruz, and I just know how important it is to have food and clothing and also shelter and the things that are just basic necessities for people who don't have anything. You know, I know how much of a struggle it is.
So you're outdoors tonight, for instance.
Oh, no. I have a situation where I do have shelter and stuff. But
Excellent.
Yeah, but I do know how hard it is for anybody. Doesn't matter what their orientation or their lifestyles are. I just know how, you know, this country and how much we do have and how much we limit ourselves by, I guess you would call it ignorance or disregard, maybe.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, if anybody wants to help with the Interfaith's satellite shelter program, or the, I guess it's the Associated Federation of Churches. I'm not quite sure what they call themselves.
I think their title is ISSP. They might have a website.
Yeah,
program.
That's the name of the program that's been around for 25 years, but that went into kind of decline for a while, was gone actually for a while. And
oh,
it was
really?
Started again. We started again by the Association of Churches about a year or two ago. Steve Plaich, with whom I have numerous differences of opinion, but he has been working regularly with that group, and he has no problem with people reaching him directly by phone. So I would suggest people who want to donate things to the ISSP, donate money to the ISSP, perhaps volunteer for the ISSP, give him a call, 466-6078. 466-6078 is his number. His name is Steve Plaich, rhymes with H. And
right.
He can also be found every Monday evening at the Red Church,
okay.
Calvary Episcopal on, I guess it's Lincoln and Cedar Streets, where there's a meal between 5 and and 7. You're probably familiar with that. And he serves bagels. He's over in the corner, tall guy with the silver hair. He's not responding to my phone calls much on the air because I'm...
Well, wasn't he running for county representative or
he was running
city
for city
council?
Yeah, he was running for city council. He did in the last two elections. He says he's still running now, although more recently when he spoke about it on the air, he said he was willing to step aside for other candidates who he thought might be more electable.
Okay.
He has a website called Citizens for a Better Santa Cruz, which is usually troll-infested with Take Back Santa Cruz types, but also... has some debate. He's been doing some censoring on the website that I don't much agree with. But, you know, he also is, he's a person of varied skills, and he was involved, he master of ceremony, the Surveillance City Forum that the ACLU and Take Back the Fourth co-sponsored, which is an attempt to expose the police departments.
Okay. Well, when I was back in the helping the people at disadvantage, there was a city ordinance passed where churches could open their parking lots and let people stay in their parking lots overnight and such.
Yeah,
three
vehicles.
I don't know how many vehicles or how many.
Three vehicles. Three vehicles. Yeah. Three vehicles per church parking lot.
Only three per
correct
per parking lot.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's kind of. Well,
I mean, that might actually make a significant impact if churches actually did it, but
right.
Very, very few do. I mean, these seven churches that, you know, have opened up their, I don't even know if any, most all of them have parking lots, probably at least a few of them do, but, you know, they opened up their buildings once a night. This was a program, and I've always been a little skeptical of the ISSP program, though I went to jail 25 years ago supporting it. They arrested us because we sat in demanding that it be expanded.
Okay.
But, you know, at its maximum, in the mid, about 2005, 6, 7, 8, it had 80 people. It serviced 80 people a night.
Okay.
And then that was that. I mean, and then it collapsed because they couldn't pay for the gas. They were trying to transport people around in vehicles.
I see.
I guess now they're using a come-to-the-church sort of thing on your own, you know, on your own steam.
Right.
Deal. But it's, you know, I mean, you're talking 1,500 to 2,000 people are outside. Not that all these people want to be inside a church
or inside a rigid
program. And these programs generally aren't rigid. I haven't heard a lot of complaints about the ISSP program this year, but it serves a, you know, very small number of people, only 20
right.
people in each church,
Anything helps out. You know, also with the things like that, if there's what we call people who are interested, who can volunteer time, or activists who see the cause is worthy. You know, that's how things grow, is when people put their lives into it, you know, or their elbow grease or their sweat equity or however. I mean, you know, again,
I suppose. I that's why I took actions I did a quarter century ago, and I saw that it had a limit, and it ultimately served a very small number of people. And,
right.
and you're right. The people it served, I'm glad it served them. But, you know, if you want to, I mean, I always tell people on my show, we have to go for the more basic solutions. But I also say, sure, I would, you know, if anybody wants to get in touch with Plaich at 466-6078,
right.
he can give you more information about exactly what these programs need, where they meet,
right.
You know, what time to go, and so forth. And that's what, and if you want to donate money, he can tell you how to do that, too.
Right.
And so that's, again, I'll give you that number, 466-6078. That's my suggestion. But I have to, you know, I have to temper it by saying, it's like giving money to a charity that's helping, you know, 1% or 2% of the people. I mean, it's, you know, it helps a small. It'll make you feel good, and it'll make that 1% or 2% feel good, for sure. Yeah.
What about your broader vision for the things of the people of necessity?
Well, you know, we obviously need things like emergency shelter tonight, period. We need it, you know. People need to, and I don't know, I have no answer as to how to do it. The facilities are all there. There are plenty of vacant buildings. There are
a lot of
open space. Campgrounds can be done. What we lack is the political will and the organization and the solidarity. And in Santa Cruz, that's particularly difficult because you have a gentrified community becoming more and more gentrified, rather more and more paranoid, and it's going further and further to the right. You know, in terms of police state solutions and running off homeless people and characterizing sleep as a crime, they've always done that for the last four 40 years. But now they're turning it into a real crime drive, and they're jacketing people with calling them criminals because they do things like sit next to a building, and they're calling them repeat offenders. They're going to put their pictures up in different. I mean, it's grotesque.
That's outrageous. Yeah.
It's sort of like it's a prosecution of it's a hate crime prosecution of a minority group. An economic minority group, but a minority has nothing to do with behavior, unless you mean the survival behaviors that are necessary for people to use, and that, you know, is kind of what I keep repeating over and over on the show.
What about the friendship camaraderie with Huff? I mean, and then also the outreach of the freedoms for people. People trying to help people get to work, or trying to get people jobs, or trying to help people. I know there's the Homeless Garden Project. I know there's a few other things that are out there for people. I'm not sure of all of them, but
well, the main thing that's out there, the main thing that's out there probably is is a lumberyard. Go there and stand there and get a job, but they're more likely to pick up, people that they feel they have to pay less to, which are, struggling immigrants whose papers are in question.
Well, I know they have, like, a labor-ready and, those temporary employment-type things. But there's nothing that really wants to meet the niche as far as reaching out and helping those people who have limited education or who have been kind of oppressed and have no ability to get back into a niche or back into a livelihood, even if it's just a modest, anything helps. I know that for a fact. I mean, spare change a few hours work at a decent pay makes a big difference for people who have nothing.
Well, what Huff does is we're pretty much into the civil rights, neck of the woods, the social services stuff. We're mostly monitoring to see that they don't discriminate against people, which they do, unfortunately. And so your questions are very pertinent, and your comments are, relevant, too. I think that we need to do a survey, and I'm sure somebody has, of job opportunities in Santa Cruz. The problem with job opportunities is you got to have a place to stay, or you have to be able to place without having your property stolen by police or, rampaged by other people or rained out. And you obviously need such things as emergency campgrounds. That's something, for example, that Brent Adams has talked about with his sanctuary camp for some time. And he has an event coming up where he's inviting people to come to a fancy dinner to fund it. And then he hopes to have a camp out in April, which will involve homeless and housed people together. It's a great vision.
Yeah.
His problem is he's taking a road where he's going to ask for the permission of the authorities, as I understand it, and that, of course, won't be forthcoming. And then the question is, what's he going to do then with all those, that's the problem. That's always been the problem. Most of what Huff does, we encourage people to stand up to authorities as much as possible to try to activate the conscience of people.
They still have the community phone service for the people who don't have phones and stuff. Don't they still have the call-in mailboxes?
I believe that Paul Brindell's, formerly Paul Brindell, I guess his Community Action Board has that. I know I had heard that the free phone use in terms of outgoing phone calls at the Homeless Lack of Services Center, as I like to call them, I've told that stopped, but I haven't heard anything recent. Caller, let me wind this up and give you the last word because I got stuff I want to do on the air, and maybe others that want to call in too.
Okay. Well, one other thing I was going to ask about: there's no community action board for Huff or where people can network together at this time, is there? Or
if you want to network with Huff, you just call the Huff line at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, or come to a Huff meeting.
Okay.
But, we're a minuscule group. I mean, we're not talking big-time stuff at all.
Oh, no, but you're still proactive, and that's the whole thing. You haven't given up, and that's the most important thing.
Nope, we haven't given up.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I really do appreciate it.
Hey, thank you, caller.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. And, wow, thank you for calling in. Let's hear some more of the protests from a week ago, Wednesday the 5th, in front of the coffee roasting company. And as I was saying, we were being surveilled by, I guess, the poor lone officer, Wilson. I was there, female officer. Nice woman, you know, I'm nothing against her. It's just when people put on the uniform and the badge and the gun, they're responsible for what they do, even if they're nice people. And surveilling a political protest is bullshit, frankly. Waste of resources, abusive, and it attempts, I think, to intimidate, even though it may not, I don't think Officer Wilson has that intention herself. The presence of that kind of a police is a message to a number of people. Now, to us, I mean, old-timers, you know, we're used to it. But to other people who are concerned and anxious and you know, don't want to get any potential involvement with the police, it can be a real turnoff. So here's some more from that protest a week ago.
It looks like that's a description of how homeless people are given.
The reason I did that is the reason I did that is because I want her to feel the way it feels.
You're here. Well, it is 10 to 3, and the sun is coming out, and still the hapless Officer Wilson is stuck in front of Nectar watching a protest. I have the utmost sympathy for officers, particularly when there isn't even a chair for this woman.
I know.
I mean, come on. What's going on here? This is one of our police officers who actually is charged with dealing with real lethal force situations, theoretically. She's wasted here in downtown. We need some. Can no one help this poor woman before she has to stare again at our protest? It's a sad day down here in Santa Cruz. Nice talk. We have a patron of the roasting company. Have you been discriminated against for having a backpack? I see you have a looks like a small backpack.
Yeah. Well, I haven't really experienced discrimination in the roasting company.
Good.
I don't attend. Well, I don't. I'm not a Starbucks patron because.
Because?
I prefer to give my business to.
Local folks?
Yes. People who live around here, not some chain.
Well, it's interesting. I'm not coffee.
And I believe at that point we may have run out of tape, and so we will turn to the next tape, and goodness knows what we may find. Perhaps even before that, in order to add a little variety to the show, let's take one of the sometimes notorious but occasionally entertaining musical breaks and listen to a tune from Sowing the Seeds, the 10th anniversary. I had some great stuff last time I played some of these cuts. Let's listen to The Bravest.
The first plane hit the other tower right after I came in. It left a fiery gaping hole where offices had been. We stood and watched in horror as we saw the first ones fall. Then someone yelled, "Get out, get out, they're trying to kill us all." I grabbed the pictures from my desk and joined a flight for life. With every step I called the names of my children and my wife. And then we heard them coming up from several floors below. A crowd of firefighters with their heavy gear in tow. Now every time I try to sleep, I'm haunted by the sound of firemen pounding up the stairs while we were running down. And when we met them on the stairs, they said we were too slow. Get out, they yelled at us, the whole thing's gonna go. They didn't have to tell us twice, we'd seen the world on fire. We kept on running downstairs while they kept climbing higher. Now every time I try to sleep, I'm haunted by the sound of firemen pounding up the stairs while we were running down. Thank God we made it to the street. We ran through ash and smoke. I didn't know which way to run. I thought that I would choke. A fireman took me by the arm and he pointed me uptown. And Christ, I heard him whisper as the tower came roaring down. So now I go to funerals for men I never knew. The pipers play Amazing Grace as the coffins come in view. They must have seen it coming when they turned to face the fire. They sent us down to safety, then they kept on climbing high. Now every time I try to sleep, I'm haunted by the sound of firemen pounding up the stairs while we were running down. Of firemen pounding up the stairs while we were running down.
And that was two, one called The Bravest, two songs, the other called 19 Miles to Baghdad. First by Tom Paxton, the second by Lizzie West and the White Buffalo. So you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org on your computer. And the call-in number here is 427-3772. And for the guy who just called in, I got a call off air that there's someone who might have some suggestions, might want to work with you. If you give a call to the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833, I'll try to hook you up with this guy. I don't know if he has any donations for the ISSP. I don't think so, but he feels he could perhaps work with you in some other ways if you're interested. Again, 423-HUFF, and that's the number to call. If you have stuff you want to bring to my attention off air, I can get back to you, you know, if you give me some kind of contact number and so forth. More stuff from the streets, and let's roll into it.
Well, it's about 3:20 down here at the Santa Cruz 11 support protest, the 11th for the 11 protest, where we are waving at traffic, but they're not waving back from the town clock, and it's March 11th. This is a protest involving the Santa Cruz 11, those who are selected out of scores of people who are inside the famous vacant Wells Fargo leased bank building at 75 River Street over 2 years ago. And the protest here has about 10 people, although I'm here late. You've been at the protest for a while. How long have you, is this the high point of the protest, or did you have a swelling multitude of several hundred before?
The numbers have varied throughout the day, I'd say, you know. Earlier, we were up on campus, and yeah, probably hundreds of people came and went. Down here, it's been a little bit more varied, but here's more of a showing rather than, it's, you know, we're not in the people traffic part of town.
What was the reaction of the student body up on campus at UCSC?
A lot were interested. They hadn't heard much. When we started talking about the case, they realized they had heard of the occupation back a couple years ago, and they just didn't know much about the case, so they were grateful that we were there.
Was there any connection with the more recent Han or Han or whatever the heck the building occupation that they did?
I didn't have any specific conversations around it, though I imagine the theme of occupation was more present for the student body.
And did you get anyone else to buy one of these I was in the building t-shirts up there?
A couple people were interested, and though no one specifically purchased or donated to that cause, we did have a number of people grab flyers to put up other places, though, and that was really encouraging.
And actually, I know you're a longtime supporter of the Santa Cruz 11, the traitorous dog that you are. Were you in the building? I see you have a t-shirt that says, I was in the building.
In spirit, I was. I supported the occupation, though personally, I never went inside the building.
Now, were you in town at the time?
I was only in town for, well, I guess I was half in town. I was working in and out of town, so throughout
the
day,
you were too busy to join your comrades inside the building?
Too busy making money, slaving away. But I did stop by and drop off some food and chat with people.
Dropped off? You mean you stepped into the... Let me contact Bob Lee. We have a phone here. We're able to call Bob Lee. That, in fact, is what this is all about, right?
I believe there might have been some crumbs in the building that were my responsibility, so I should be held accountable for those crumbs that they had to clean up.
Or one of the crumbs who left crumbs. Is that the idea?
That's right. That's me, the crumb.
Now, I understand there's a phone-in happening here where you're encouraging Bob Lee to pursue justice rather than the Santa Cruz 11.
Yeah, it's a good point, yeah. We are of the position that pursuing prosecution of the four remaining members of the Santa Cruz 11 at this point is not in the best interest of our community. Talking about the money that's spent on the court hearings and the potential trial that's coming up, and impact on the people, the defendants themselves, as well as the community, and the potential ramifications of dissent. And the, you know, it seems like with the prosecution not being clear about what they're doing, drawing this case out.
It has been going on for 2 years now.
Oh. Right, over 2 years, and if they had a case, they'd make it and they'd move on, but it seems like there's other motivations, perhaps to discourage that type of activity, the occupations, or to just, I don't really know, but regardless, it doesn't feel like justice, and so we're trying to make that clear that, you know, those of us here, citizens of Santa Cruz County, want the DA to represent us and not Wells Fargo.
Interesting. So, I know there is a hearing coming up on, what, March 26th, a status hearing of some kind?
That's correct. It seems to be really just kind of a placeholder meeting just to check in and say, yep, we're waiting for this thing to happen with the judge and the 170.1 motion that the prosecution filed.
Tell us what that motion is.
That motion basically is accusing the judge of being biased.
Judge
saying,
Paul Burdick.
Judge Paul Burdick.
Well, I think he is, but I probably think he's biased in a different way than they think.
You know, we all have our own opinions, but as far as the case goes, he hasn't shown really heavy leaning any way. It seems like he just wants the case to move on. That's been his, seems like his motivation.
I think he should have thrown it out at the preliminary hearing, but that's just my view.
Sure, and somewhat what this call-in day is motivated by is I forget the statute itself, but there's a statute that says that if the case is not in the best interest of the county of justice, the judge has the right to throw it out. And, you know, we're trying to represent the county's opinion or
encourage the county,
encourage
to, speak
the county to speak up, right? Offering insight into what's happening and then letting people make their own decisions.
How many people would you estimate have called in, at least in your personal, from your personal vantage point?
My personal vantage point, I'd say about 40 around where I've been, and that's a number of them have had to wait up to 20 minutes on hold because the line's been busy, which only leads me to guess that other people are calling in from other locations.
And what, of course, he's talking about, in case it isn't clear, is DA, District Attorney Bob Lee, who is pursuing a $200,000 case against the Santa Cruz 11. He's already spent $100,000. Or put another way, the cost to the taxpayers in terms of court time and so forth has been at least $100,000. More than half the defendants have been dismissed. There are four left, none of whom have done any vandalism, but they're being accused of being present earlier, and subsequently vandalism was done by someone else. Therefore, he's going after them because they haven't done the proper police work or don't know who the, quote, vandals are. Bob Lee is the guy who's spearheading this whole prosecution and pressing on with it, in spite of the fact that he doesn't seem to want to assign anybody but incompetent DAs to deal with this. Even recently, DA Pennard, I think his name is, the man who replaced Rebecca Young, was accused, at least by one of the attorneys for the defense, of withholding discovery, that is to say, withholding evidence, which, of course, was something all the attorneys accused the previous DA of, and the judge accused the previous DA of, and the previous DA, Rebecca Young, admitted she had, and kept doing it with one excuse after another until finally the judge got tired of it and sanctioned her. The mildest possible sanction, unfortunately, a $500 fine, which is still going through the courts. DA Bob Lee must have spent thousands of dollars appealing that decision. It's still being appealed. He had a 47-page document, something that I believe those are, that's, I think, the number of pages are there. It's a long document defending Rebecca Young. Rebecca Young, and her, for her part, tucked in her tail, you know, and left town and resigned from the DA's office. She's now reportedly gone to Texas. Somebody should track her down and get the real story about what's going on in the DA's office. That could be a job for, who knows, some intrepid reporter. Anyway, that's what this whole phone-in was about. Phone Bob Lee on the 11th and tell him to drop charges. And it was actually planned at a time when the trial was supposed to go forward, but the trial has now been delayed for several months by the prosecution again, because the prosecution wants to get a more compliant judge. This judge, Burdick, is a little tired of this case. He thinks he's been clear in expressing kind of weariness about the case. And he is, in fact, he told one jury in a murder case that he said, thank you for sitting through this case. You should be glad you don't have to sit through this next case coming up. And that really doesn't quite, I suppose. I mean, the DA thinks it's bias. So now they're trying to have him removed for cause. And that's apparently not an easy thing to do. You get one shot at a judge before, you know, things start to roll, kind of a peremptory challenge. After that, it has to be something pretty heavy to move it out of a judge's court. Not that I have any respect for these judges generally. I don't. Burdick included. He should have dropped this case 2 years ago. At least after he should have dropped it in response to the total lack of discovery that was, not the total lack, but the substantive lack of handing over the evidence that the DA's office was engaged in. That's Bob Lee's responsible for that. Yeah, Rebecca Young is the DA, but Bob Lee knows what's going on, or he should. It's his responsibility, aside from coming in and making nasty comments about homeless people before the city council, which is what he did 2 weeks ago. He's also got a responsibility to know what his own DAs are doing, and he didn't seem to, or if he did, he was just fine with it. Who knows? But in any case, the case was delayed, and this whole thing was supposed to be, this phone-in would have happened in the middle of the case with people urging the district attorney to drop the charges and stop this. Now, however, because they'd already set the date, the supporters of the Santa Cruz 11, even though the trial has been postponed probably several months, there is a court date March 26th, which is really sort of a what-the-heck-is-going-on date. But according to informed sources, mostly the attorneys involved, it's going to take, and the judge, it's going to take months to get this whole challenge to Judge Burdick straightened out. If they win, it will probably go into a court that is more sympathetic to the prosecution. But can they convince 12 jurors that people just being in the building, if they can prove that, and there's a lot of doubt about that, it's just really, I mean, there was really sloppy police work, and the evidence they had didn't justify this huge expense and this long harassment of the 11 of us, and had nothing to do with the vandalism. That's the problem. I mean, they don't go after the real folks. They could have arrested people at the time in the building. They chose not to do it. And that might have been a wise choice, and there was negotiations, and people left peacefully, and there was graffiti left, and some furniture was broken, and I guess there was a room where people crapped in the room because the water was turned off or some such thing, and the electricity was turned off. So it's a bunch of bullshit. It's all about Occupy, attacking protesters. It's a sort of vindictive, ex post facto kind of attack, which has had the effect of, I think, chilling a lot of people in the community. I've said that repeatedly. Although people are beginning to come out, this T-shirt, "I was in the building," is a way of people standing up and saying, this is a bunch of crap. And in the past, there at least one activist, Brent Adams, who's still being charged with this, being he's one of the final four, encouraged those who were in the building and those who weren't to stand up in solidarity and say, "I was in the building," or "arrest me." And only one man was willing to do that, Ed Fry. But they didn't charge him. Plenty of other people were in the building who were clearly visible in the police videotapes. They weren't charged. So, they went after activists like myself, who are also reporters mostly, Bradley Allen and Alex DeRosi, other activists who they didn't like. And that's in fact what they did. Whether that was necessarily their motivation, hard to tell. But it's caused a lot of grief, a lot of stress, a lot of money, and it's a clown show. It's a circus. It's something that is little to do. It has nothing to do with justice, quite the opposite. And that's what this whole protest was about, this phone-in. So if I don't sound objective, it's because I'm more objecting here. I try to say what the facts are, but the facts to me lead to certain conclusions, and I'm not afraid to say what they are, in my view. And not reluctant either, for that matter.
Could be, or it could be they're kicking the phone off the hook.
Maybe they're just... Actually, the receptionist has been very patient and really sweet with everyone that's called, and we've encouraged everyone to be really courteous likewise.
The poor receptionist.
She's been...
And then if Bob Lee answers, it's a, "Fuck you, you scumbag!" Well, actually, that would be perhaps a little too harsh. How about finding a job in some other county? That would be my approach.
Trying to suggest that... Right. Yeah, you know, it's, everyone's entitled to their own approach, and that would be yours, and that would be great.
So, again, I guess this is a motion, you say, that the DA's filed when the trial was about to go forward after 2 years,
right,
on these final four of the Santa Cruz 11 defendants, seven of whom have been found. found insufficient evidence to do anything, indicating that the basic charge now is felony vandalism, but there's no evidence that I'm aware of, and I was at most, if not all, of the hearings, that indicates any personal vandalism by any of the defendants.
That's correct, yeah. Similarly, I've been at most of the hearings, and it seems like they're pursuing the clause that states, basically, if you're present, then you're liable if other people do things. It's kind of like a guilty by association.
You were there and somebody else did something, even if that happened 17 hours later, you're still responsible.
Even if they can't prove when it happened, it could have happened before anyone even occupied the building.
They don't even have the people who did it.
They don't know the state of the building before anyone went into it. You know, who knows when these things happened, but they know that they're accusing these people of being involved with the occupation in general and therefore responsible, when they also acknowledge that there's 50, hundreds of people who were involved in the occupation, and, you know, it's curious why they're not pursuing...
Hey, a car is actually taking a flyer. Yeah. The first time in 15 minutes, this could be the beginnings of a trend.
Yeah? Maybe this person on a bike wants one.
I don't know. It's possible.
Would you like more info?
Yeah.
He's okay.
He'd better be, as far as I'm concerned. At least I'm okay. You're okay. It sounds like the end of a book.
Yeah, yeah.
An old book, maybe.
An old book.
Yes.
Maybe we can rewrite it.
Eric Byrne, games people play. That's an old story from the 1960s. So, we have four defendants who are facing, as I understand, up to 4 years in prison, theoretically.
Theoretically.
For felony vandalism, and then, of course, the underlying charge, which is misdemeanor trespass.
Hey, thanks!
All right. Right. Thank you. People are waiting. Nobody's honking. After all, we don't want to get a ticket for honking our horn inappropriately.
We're not trying to pollute the air here.
Notice no one's on the median getting out flyers. Is that because of the new stand on the median, get another kind of ticket ordinance?
Hey!
All right, there's a honk.
Yeah, we're trying to respect all laws here. Yeah,
exactly. Well, you're trying to respect. Speak for yourself.
I myself and the people that I brought some of these things
your
here
crew,
with.
Your crew, your coterie.
My
your cabal.
Co-conspirators.
Your co-conspirators. Unindicted.
Conspiring towards fun.
Conspiring for fun, yeah.
That's part of the spirit of the 11 for the 11 is definitely getting the word out there, but also enjoying it and enjoying the community as well. It's not really an antagonistic thing. It's a protest, but I see it also as just getting out there and talking. What we used to do, I think, as humans, talk to each other, right?
Play with each other, fondle each other, muse on each other's problems, ignore each other,
throw papers,
rage at each other.
Oh, yeah, rather than tweet at each other.
Ah, yes, or Facebook each other.
What's that?
Yeah, it's one of those things they do.
Oh, okay.
Right. So, I see we have some signs here.
I'm going to try to hand out some flyers.
Go for it, please. Very good. And we have flyers that are being offered. I think I will do the same. Okay, I'm on the other side of the town clock now, in the shade, and I'm talking with...
Randolph Baden-Tolley III.
Also known as...
Dread Eye.
And, Randolph, you got some stuff you want to pass on to us?
Yeah, I'm having a problem. Now that I'm settling down here, and this is my second semester in school, and I'm doing pretty good, I'm having a problem with the police. Officer Hoppy has made it so, because I got in a fight, and I didn't even get in a fight, there was no physical, I didn't hit the officer, but he made it so I was arrested and looking like I got in a fight with the police in the park, and now he's made it so I can't get into housing, and he's put all the paperwork around everywhere for me not to get accepted like I'm violent, and I'm really getting kind of upset with, it feels like a vendetta Officer Hoppy has against me. Now, in the past, I've cussed at him, but I really don't care, and I hope he has a great life. I just wish he'd stop fucking with me.
Hear, hear. Have you had any other reports from other people about a similar situation or other situations you want to comment on?
No, actually, since I've been going to school, all the police have been really cool to me, and they're all showing me a lot of respect. And I'm not trying to be a problem anymore on the street, and I'm trying to get off the street, and I'm trying to do the best I can. And I'm just having a problem with Officer Hoppy.
Now, I see you have a backpack. Have you had any problems in cafes telling you can't come in with a backpack?
No, I haven't, because I don't look homeless. I look... For homeless, I'm pretty nice.
Yeah, you're pretty well dressed, although your clothing are dark. Could be you're one of those questionable Occupy type people.
They're well washed.
Well washed, true. And your backpack is not huge, but it is big. Fairly. I mean, it's plump. It's a plump backpack.
It's got my school supplies in it and my books. So. And it's got, you know, some of my personal stuff.
And you've never been denied access to a cafe?
No, I haven't.
Excellent. May that continue to be the case. Oh, have you tried recently in the last
Actually, a while ago, I was denied access to the coffee shop across from Starbucks, the Santa Cruz Cafe.
Coffee roasting company.
I was banned from there for like a year, but I was allowed back in there since then and haven't had a problem.
What was the reason you were banned?
I was seen smoking a hit off of a joint in front of their place.
In front of their place?
Yep.
Not on the premises, but on the public sidewalk?
No, on their porch.
On their porch. Well, you're obviously a major criminal. You know, we don't want your kind around town.
Oh, yeah, I can't smoke any pot. Nope, that's so bad. But they let all kinds of people who steal meth and steal bikes, they're running all around. It's kind of funny.
Have you seen much in the way of homeless on homeless crime in the last couple months escalating, or have you just not, you've been kind of out of the scene?
That's right.
I've been kind of out of the scene because I'm staying at a friend's house and paying some rent, and I'm trying to stay off the streets and go to school. I'm just trying to do the right thing.
How's school treating you?
Great.
You like it?
Yes.
And we've been talking with that student and scholar.
Dread Eye, Randolph Baden Tolley III.
Thank you, Randolph. So we also had a couple of guys here earlier who are gone now.
And take care.
A couple of guys here earlier who spoke about probation stops and search stops, getting a ticket yesterday after eating a hamburger in front of McDonald's during the, I think it was the afternoon. And he said the reason was they wanted to search him, but they could have searched him anyway without giving him a citation for obstructing the sidewalk because, he said, he has a search clause. Another time prior to that, the day before, he was stopped on the levee for being given a ticket for being in a forbidden area. Again, he said he thought this was a pretext for searching, and he said it's frequently done, but they don't need a pretext. He's not quite sure why they do it, or at least I was a bit mystified as to why this would be done, unless to simply express a kind of hostility and inflict a kind of suffering. But I'm sure our police force and deputies have only the best interests of the community in mind. So I've gotten the word from our secret informant, who remains quite a source of information, but ever in the shadows, he or she has told me that there is an item on the city council agenda today regarding code compliance, which may be a form of, shall we say, ghetto removal, upscaling, gentrification. David Silva, you have some thoughts on it.
Yes, I do. They call it, you know, a $200,000 bundle to just make sure that they have code compliance in Santa Cruz. But there's a campaign. There's something about it, the way they're doing it. I suspect, and so does your silent partner there, I suspect that it is about the gentrification of the beach flats. And what it's going to, the only thing it's going to do is it's going to spend money to evict people living in shacks out onto the street. And that's just, it's just a crime waiting to happen. We got to stop it. The people have to rise up. Rise up, everybody.
Why shouldn't we rise up? Rise up in freedom's name.
Hallelujah. And so it is.
It's gentrifying, but
and our secret source, who inappropriately just said something into the microphone. Note her name and her, I won't give her name, but note her voice for future reference. She suggested that this, in fact, is not just about code compliance. It's about the creation of more homeless people in the future. Naturally, she's an obvious alarmist who's trying to turn the city against the kind of development that will make us strong and proud and rich. Perhaps not. So meanwhile, hiding in the shade, in the shadows, Becky Johnson, one of the original and actually arrested the Santa Cruz 11, is sporting her I Was in the Building t-shirt and her sign, Support the Santa Cruz 11. Haven't you had enough, Johnson?
Apparently not enough, because there's still four people charged, and so we're still supporting them. And, of course, our own rights and our own pushback against the mortgage fraud, the robo-signing of loans, the foreclosures, and bank-owned properties that are piling up in Santa Cruz County to no one's benefit here. So that's what this is about. And I'm still here. I see you are too.
Well, I was in the building, so says my t-shirt, and so say I. In fact, so said I from the very beginning. Probably was one of the first, and one of the most stupid. I mean, one of the most brave on that issue. Anything you noted in any more recent developments in the Santa Cruz 11 case you wish to comment on?
Just the reaction of people here. I've been here for a couple hours, and most people don't know about Santa Cruz 11. It's a mystery to them. They never heard of it. They don't know what's going on. But of the people that we have taken the time to read our flyers or have it explained to them are enthusiastic supporters of for dropping the charges against the remaining four defendants.
Can I let anybody come by and shout, jail them, anything like that?
Well, I think I saw someone, a former candidate for city council, drove by and gave me a big thumbs down.
Who was that former candidate?
Oh, gosh, I knew you were going to say that. You had something very... Her career was dashed early on because of you going to a key, I think it was People's Democratic Club or one of those endorsement forums, and you persuaded, you said you're sure you persuaded four people to not vote for her, and so that's when Chris Krohn got in.
I'll remember
her name eventually.
Yes, I believe that was one of the candidates in 1998 who ran against the silver-haired three, Krohn, Sugar, and Fitzmaurice, who worked out so nicely when they finally got into office.
Linda,
just kidding.
Linda Steinau.
There you are. Linda, who was, in fact, the Downtown Association president or chair or some such member. She was a business person par excellence.
I think that might have been her giving me a very enthusiastic thumbs down when I was holding the sign by the road a few minutes ago.
Well, it's interesting. People sometimes change their spots, change their opinions. I know for a while we worked with former Coast Commercial Bank, CEO Michael Schmidt, who was quite an activist endorsing the end of the sleeping ban. Although if you look at his letters in the last 5 years, he is a big supporter of the Take Back Santa Cruz positions, which I really intended to ask him about on the air, but I haven't yet been able to. I've reached him, but I haven't yet been able to establish an interview.
Well, Robert, just because we grow older doesn't mean we grow better.
That's probably true, I must say. You did, however, do some writing yourself about this issue recently. You wrote an article about the Santa Cruz 11 situation.
Yes, I did. And I haven't posted on my blog, but I intend to. I think it's on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz now.
It is. It's also, if you actually look on the calendar of Indie Bay, although by the time you look at it, it'll be a day beyond, and this calendar will have folded into the future. But you are referenced there. You wrote along a rather interesting article, and of course there have been a number of articles in the Street Spirit about the issue in the past. And I guess there's hearings coming up at the end of March, but a likely trial isn't likely to materialize for several months.
It looks like the motion by D.A. Pinato to recuse Judge Verdict has thrown the wrench in the clockworks of this jury trial, so postponing it into the indefinite future, possibly not till next fall.
Fair enough. Now, I know that Bob Lee is running
I found out actually for the first time that no one has taken up the cudgels to oppose him in the upcoming election, and that opportunity closed, I think it was last Friday or something. Why didn't you sign up to oppose him, Becky?
I'm pretty sure you have to be an attorney, bar-certified attorney in the state of California to run for district attorney.
Pledge for DA?
So, you know, get down on all your lawyer friends, Robert.
I already have, but probably not on this issue. Anything else you want to say?
Just that the March 26th hearing is probably not going to be definitive in any way, but this effort, people are asking to have people call DA Bob Lee and call him on his phone and leave a message for him that you think that this prosecution is frivolous, that it's politically motivated, it's a waste of money, it's certainly a waste of time, it will not bring about any justice, and why is he pimping for Wells Fargo?
Perhaps you can use your sources inside the bank, Becky, to get more information on that subject.
Yes, my deep throats.
And we've been talking with?
Becky Johnson.
Thank you, Becky. So it's around 4 o'clock now, and a few folks are leaving, but the hardcore folks are still here with their flyers and their banners. And across the street, there is a fence around the what had been a bank across the street, and that fence fences off a series of cars in the parking lot, as well as this brick bank building, which is still empty after, I don't know, 1 year, 2 years, apparently a shorter time than the 5-year vacancy of the 75 River Street building, for which the Santa Cruz 11, the final four, are still being charged. But there are vacant banks here, there, and everywhere in Santa Cruz. There are certainly in many spots. Gathering moss. So there are several folks here sleeping. And it's called the Town Clock Plaza, according to the sign here. And sleeping is hours are 7 a.m. to sunset daily. No camping, smoking, alcohol, or glass containers permitted in the park. That's quite a reach for this area. It's concrete with a few areas of tiny areas of bushes and flowers. Please recycle and use trash receptacles. Dogs must be on leash at all times. And I noticed the fenced off bank area also has an open access area from the other side. It's where people are parked. It looks like who aren't the employees of the bank, or there's nothing seems to be happening in the vacant building. But the area that normally was open to this little side street, which is Knight, K-N-I-G-H-T, Knight Street, is fenced off. But the other entrance to the street, the other side, is not fenced off. So I guess the suggestion is, you can park as long as you don't use the town clock area for protest. I don't know if that's the message, but that certainly could be part of the message. So I'm.
Or perhaps also there's a small bar near there. But it's interesting that the parking lot is allowed to be open from one side but not the other. And I'm. It seems, you know, kind of a community nuisance to have it open only on one side and not on both sides. But I haven't spoken to the owners, so who knows what's going on.
I'm here with that woman of the streets, the scarf mistress. What's your name, madam?
I'm not going on record right now.
You're not going on record. But she is in front of the coffee roasting company doing some nice knitting. And a sign says, please help me if you can. Across the street, we have unreasonably disturbing. Disturbing.
That's louder than you see.
Okay. Dude, that's not a freaking tape, man. Those guys drive me nuts. And you know what? I've had a hospitality person tell me that they drive her nuts.
That's nice, but they don't try to cite them for unreasonably disturbing noise.
They're moving.
It doesn't matter if they're moving.
Okay in the ordinance.
No, it doesn't matter if you're moving or not. It just doesn't require a complaint. It's a violation of the law. And all you have to do is have some host who have the balls or some private citizen to complain about it. Or some cop, for that matter. It doesn't really matter. We're talking about motorcycles down here on Pacific Avenue. It's, 5:10.
And we have a call-in. Let's see who's ring-a-dinging. Yao, you're on free radio.
Yes, I was wondering, what frequency is the free radio broadcast on?
We're at 101.3.
Okay, great. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, sure.
Bye.
Hopefully that wasn't the FCC. Continuing, this is an interview in front of the Near the Coffee Roasting Company with a scarf lady, Kate Wenzel, who has been repeatedly harassed and pursued by CSO Barnett. So much so that when I saw her, she wasn't giving out, selling scarves. And she has a lot of her comments she felt she couldn't make because she was concerned that they would prompt further harassment and also might interfere with her court case pending. But she did say a few things, and we'll hear what she did say.
And I've just learned that Kate here, who's not wanting to go on record, having been shocked into paranoid silence by John Colby, thank you so much. And actually, what we have here is a matter of some concern, which is that apparently police are paying closer attention to Kate because of...
And that's a shot at John. John's a great guy who's doing a lot of work trying to defend the rights of disabled homeless folks. And a lot of what he's done involves elaborate, detailed, and... widely disseminated complaints to federal agencies like the Department of Justice, where he's attempting to hold accountable institutions that are not serving homeless people properly, such as the Santa Cruz Police Department, the Homeless Lack of Services Center, and other agencies and groups that homeless people have to interact with or that are interacting with homeless people in spite of whether they want to be interacted with or not. And John has been successfully making numerous Public Records Act requests. He's actually been driven out of town by the kind of harassment he's been facing, which is a whole other story. But I have some disagreements with him on a number of issues. That doesn't detract at all from the kind of work he's doing. I'm in a dual role as a journalist and an activist. I want to see... the truth exposed, and at the same time, I think it's important that people be protected from the abuses of harassment under color of law, which is a lot of what happens to homeless people. It uses the color of law to drive them away. Things like the sleeping ban, requiring business licenses, bullshit about where you can sit and where you can't sit on the street, even though it makes absolutely no difference in terms of public health and safety. A whole series of ordinances that essentially give the police the tools to drive people crazy downtown and wherever they try to go to sleep. So there are different strategies people pursue when they're dealing with this. Some people think that a legal strategy is a way to go, and John's been working on that with a lot of folks, a number of people, clients, trying to represent them. He's not a lawyer, but he's an activist who's an advocate, and that doesn't involve a long period of time. You have to wait for things to happen, and I'm not as hopeful as he is that he's going to get the Department of Justice to do diddly squat. But it obviously has had some impact on the police department. They have stopped harassing a number of people that John has specifically complained to the department about, and Pat also. His sister is in town working on that issue too, and that is no small potatoes. That's good stuff. But I get frustrated, too, because people that are people who follow that advice are also concerned with saying very little about what is actually happening to them for fear it'll be used against them in court or by the police department, and that limits our information. Let's take a musical break, and I'll be right back. Thank you. that was, too, by Brianna Brewer, a new disc she gave me. Unfortunately, she didn't tell me the... I think it's a new disc. Maybe it's an old one. You can find her stuff at Sweet Pea Brianna online, I think, if you like Brianna Brewer. Or you can listen to her at the weekly protest. She's been at the last few protests here in Santa Cruz at the Coffee Roasting Company. In the studio with me, that man of deeper vision, Free. Hello, Free.
Thank you. So those are usually at 1 o'clock. Are you happy with that hour, Robert? Would you like to change the time on that?
Free, is you're a great fan of these coffee roasting,
well, something.
Starbucks protest downtown, at least a visible protest downtown in the middle of the day, which we have been having after the Huff meeting, which meets every Wednesday at 11 at the Sub Rosa. Then we've gone down to coffee roasting. And
relatively easy for us to do.
Relatively. Set up a table, been giving out coffee.
Free coffee. And someone said that was a kindness. He goes, it doesn't really, you know, your message is fine and all, but that coffee, you know, that's a real
we
kindness.
We are actually trying to help people stay awake so they don't get pissed.
Well, they can go play drumming. Help them
part
with
of our
drumming,
social you know. Service that we provide.
Yeah, Huff actually is, you know, even when they say Huff never does anything, Huff's giving you free coffee.
Well, there are plenty of other groups that give a lot more than Huff does.
Well,
that's
at least
not
we're
our virtue,
something.
I think, is
well,
giving away free coffee.
And we're down there downtown enlightening the public to...
We will be meeting at the Food Not Bombs meal.
The post office steps.
At Saturday on the post office steps, and that's going to be...
At 4:30?
We're trying to work out what our next move should be in this series of protests that are trying to dramatize not just backpack bigotry in this various cafes, but also the absurdity of the downtown ordinances.
The shrinking sidewalks.
That are shrinking the sidewalks, exactly. Yeah. Let's hear a little more from the streets, and then I want to get your thoughts on some of this, Free.
What we I suspect and what she thinks they've heard about on the radio that involving prior interviews with her about how she's been unfairly targeted. And, of course, that could well be true. Kate went to court and has successfully disqualified Commissioner Baskett, who normally hears all infractions and doesn't really hear them, in my mind, with a... fair ear, although none of the judges really
do. I will agree with that.
And on the side is where I have my nemesis and occasional associate, Free, who's will make his own comments regardless of how many times I attempt to shut him down. So you have been transferred to a court. Can you tell us when that hearing is and in what courtroom and at what time?
I don't know. I don't.
You don't want to say anything.
Yeah, I don't really.
Okay. Right. Well, you don't have to. That is something I would investigate because I think people need to know when the hearing is so they can come. So apparently Kate's case is coming up for arraignment, I believe. Arraignment at 8:30 on the 25th of March in Department 1, you said, I believe.
Department 1, yeah.
And that's Judge Siegel, who hasn't been involved in any kinds of criminal cases that I know of, or at least not on the bench recently. Years ago, he was one of the better judges, if there is such a thing, in Santa Cruz. And, of course, the cases that are coming up for Kate are the vending without a license, which means 2 days before she got a license. And the other case is violating the move-along law, which... is, of course, a law that is almost unique to Santa Cruz and that involves mandatorily moving people along from spot to spot, banning them from returning to the same spot for 24 hours, and requiring that they distance themselves 100 feet from the prior spot, which, given the shortage of legal places to be on Pacific Avenue, is a way of either crowding everyone together or essentially making it unlikely they'll want to spend much time on Pacific Avenue.
It particularly impacts street performers because they have to set up. That takes them a little time. They also, of course, have to cram themselves into 12 square feet, which is three of those squares on Pacific Avenue, which is difficult, if not impossible.
What did it used to be?
Sorry?
What did it used to be? I mean, the 12 is new.
It used to be, they limited the amount of display device area you could have. Now they limit the total area that you and your display device and all your possessions can be.
Oh, so the display device used to be 16 square feet. Right?
The display device used to be 3 by 6 feet.
So that's
it was 18 square feet.
So they took that a third. And then all your other stuff has
and
to,
they had to cram it all in there. Yeah. Now it is true that this is not being heavily enforced against most street performers, but that is to say there aren't a lot of tickets being issued.
Yes.
That's one. But on the other hand, they are warning people a lot, which has the same impact, because street performers do not want, you know, $100, $200, $300 tickets.
Because they're not making that much every day doing it.
Right. And it's also, to me, it is an unconstitutional burden on political tablers, let's say.
Yeah.
Because that means, let's suppose you are giving out, you know, registering voters at a certain location.
Or say you were picketing. You have to pick at a
certain... Or boycotting a store, picketing a store.
Yeah, that would make it completely unconstitutional.
It would make it... You can only be there for an hour every 24 hours.
That would be a clear win for people
who were
picketing.
You would think so, but in the since 2003, when this law was created...
Well, in federal court.
It has not been... it was challenged in part by Steve Argue, who was actually arrested and taken away to jail, I think, twice under the ordinance. As well as Matthew, another guy who was arrested for it. Charges were dropped because they found a problem with discriminatory enforcement between commercial and non-commercial devices. But they changed the law very quickly in a zippity-doo-dah city council meeting, and the case was dismissed. But the law was not dismissed, and no one is. And civil attorneys who were considering suing on behalf of Argue, Kate Wells specifically, decided not to take the case.
Mm-hmm.
Because they feared they would lose it. And that has really been one of the problems, at least with local attorneys, for the last decade. They have not been willing to take cases. There have been a few changes.
You need a slam dunk case, really, because it can take, like yours, what, 12, 14 years? You know, you need to be able to win it.
I won one case. I was arrested, falsely arrested by the late lamented Sergeant Butchie Baker in front of New Leaf Market for tabling. And he claimed I was blocking the sidewalk. That was when the sidewalk was 40
feet. That's a huge sidewalk.
40
there.
Feet wide. And it was even huger when there was no fenced-off area.
The merchants weren't, encroaching upon the public forum.
That was what I was trying to do, was to encourage the community to resist that by petitioning the city council.
Mm-hmm.
And the two kiosks, including New Leaf, at that time it was Sushi Now, with Matisse Selman and his father who owned the kiosk, and... I don't know if it was Alibaba's Cafe, I think it was, or some other cafe that was at the other end. Those two green kiosks that are near New Leaf Market.
So you won like $5,000 on there, right?
They were, the attorneys,
against, who did you
attorneys
win it
split the money against,
oh, you didn't get any
against
of
the city, you know.
So. Oh, the city, great.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it was quite a collusion of police officials down there trying to make sure that we stopped, and it, you know, we set up the next day and continued, and however, was an out-of-town lawyer. Who took the case.
That's it. You have to get an out-of-town lawyer because it's a good old boy system in this town.
And I don't think he'd do so again. We ran to him in the Democratic Convention. His name was Fossbinder. And he's out of Hawaii now or something.
Yeah.
But he was concerned about civil rights. A lot of people were in the rising tide of enthusiasm for Nader and around 2000, the Seattle demonstrations. There was a lot of feeling that, you know,
now's the time
things needed to change.
Stand up.
Okay.
Then Bush got in office.
Yeah, and then Obama got in office. It's the same thing. It's it's a continuing
corporatism.
It's an interesting situation. I was reading an article criticizing the way current protests operate, colorful protests, claiming that what was colorful and outspoken and a statement in the 1960s is completely ignored and managed by authorities now. And
they learn to adapt, so you have to continually change your tactics.
Right. So apparently this writer, I'm still kind of chewing on his thoughts, claims that what they are afraid of are 200,000 people marching on Washington. You know, well organized.
A general strike. They're always afraid of that because it's all about money, as you say. It's just we live in a plutocracy. So I mean, you go after the money. You stop them from making money, and they pay attention at that point.
True enough. Oh, anyway, you may call in and join this desultory conversation at 427-3772 because you're listening to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, as I mentioned before, to the caller.
Well, you can get your own show at any time.
Yes, you can, and we do need people free. Come on back to us in the Free Radio Collective because we're running out of money, for that matter. We have to pay the rent, and we are way behind. But we're still broadcasting, as you may notice. In fact, we've upped our signal, so you should be able to hear us better.
Yeah, I hear it's coming in loud and clear.
If you want more info, yeah, that's what I hear. You can go to freakradio.org if you're out of the area, and or 101.3 if you're in
there. There's an application, but if you know a DJ, the DJ could just bring you to the meeting, and it would be much easier, expedite the process.
Yeah. That's certainly, I think that's the case. Let's hear a little more from the Santa Cruz 11 protest of 2 days ago. Wait, before we do, however, let's hear from the community. Hey there, caller. What's your name?
David Silva.
David Minton Silva?
Yeah, I just had a little quickie reminder bulletin for everybody. Hey, if you know, you believe the revolution starts now and it starts with you, call 427-3772.
Hey, that rhymes there, Silva. Thank you so much. Calling a radio show is hardly revolutionary, but it's certainly nice to hear from you. And if you have something interesting to say or something, you know, that we might...
It could be revolutionary. It all depends what you say.
I suppose so. Although it's hard to imagine how words can be revolutionary these days. I guess they if they're backed
up
with actions.
If they move people, that's all it takes.
Well, that's perhaps true. Let's hear some more.
Now, I'm not going to ask Kate to comment on this unless she wishes to at this time.
And again, we're listening to me essentially doing a lot of talking about the case of Kate Wenzel, who has had three outstanding citations, and essentially, for a number of reasons, has been deterred from selling her rather attractive scarves on Pacific Avenue.
Part of it because it's very nice here in California right now. I mean, you know, it's just almost like summer here.
Well, I think that would be a good selling point. But she's really reduced to panhandling, and she comments on this in this interview, talking about how apparently they don't want people to rise up out of poverty, at least not through any kind of street action, street performance, or street vending.
But they actually create the homeless problem by, you know, sticking them with tickets that go on their credit report, and then they can't get a job, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And it has to be said that
the other
ticket is a sleeping ticket in the vehicle, which I guess Kate was telling me she went to the homeless lack of services center, or she got in contact with them and found out that the interpretation of Chris, and there are a number of Chris's out there, there are two Chris's involved in the Paulie shelter area. I'm not sure which is the person she would talk to, but he told you, apparently, he told Kate that though the law states tickets will be dismissed if the armory is full or if you are on the waiting list for one of these places, specifically the River Street Shelter or the Paul Lee Loft, he states it has to be and. In other words, you have to, both conditions have to be met. The armory has to be full or closed, and you have to be on the waiting list, which is not the law as far as I know it, and therefore he's either in error. And I think that, you know, if Kate brings evidence to court that she was at that time on the... Actually, the first thing you should do is go to the city attorney's office
and informally
request that there be dismissal of your ticket. Show them that you are on the Pauley Loft, and they may then tell you, no, you have to do both. In which case, they're violating the law, and that's kind of interesting. So
he wrote that law.
As we work this out on the sidewalk, and poor Kate wonders, how the hell can I sell my next scarf? And, you know, without getting, you know, blown up on the radio.
I will put this out on the radio. The lady that I was talking to, the clerk, about stuff, she looked all annoyed, like I was annoying her, like, because I was too aggressive about trying to get information.
Kate is talking about her experiences in court, trying to find out what her court date was, what her bail was. Yes, room 120. How she can get information about what's going on behind the scenes, since in some cases apparently the city attorney has contacted the Commissioner Basket independently. She was able to strike Commissioner Basket through, again, a preemptive challenge, which everyone has a right to do, putting it into the court of the relatively...
A real judge,
Yeah, a real judge.
Local attorney who won an election.
Sam Siegel, or is it Steve Siegel? I think it's Steve Siegel, actually. It's Siegel, anyway, who years ago was a better judge, 20 years ago, than the other judges, but just often doesn't stay that way because the whole right-wing riptide pulls things down into a certain direction, and I think that impacts the entire community, including judges, with the exception of myself, who maintains a lone integrity amidst the degradation.
And you've got your own source of money. Judges are, you know, dependent on re-election from the community. So
I don't think these judges have ever really faced any meaningful challenges to re-election.
I know, that's the problem.
So that's not relevant, what you just said. But I think that...
they may think that.
In any case, this is a judge who's new in Department 1. He hasn't been in criminal cases here in Santa Cruz for quite a while. It'll be interesting to see what he does in the case of Kate Wenzel. And I think she has appealed... I don't know if she's appealed all three cases, or not appealed. She's moved all three cases into that court. She hasn't.
Yeah, she said they were all combined.
And so I guess... There's a sleeping ticket, there's a move-along ticket, and there's a vending without a business license ticket, something that has been not done to vendors until very recently. I have not heard of this law being enforced in the last 25 years.
They're searching,
But I think that one of the reasons that, I'm speculating, one of the reasons it is being enforced, and one of the reasons we had the sidewalk shrinkage law that came up last fall and was rammed through city council like shit through a goose, was that the city attorney had to admit that he could not protect police who want to shut down people who put prices on their artwork and prices on their music.
That was your doing, actually. You were hitting him over the head with the, what was it, White versus Sparks?
Yeah, City of Sparks versus White, and federal decision that said they can't do that. And actually, that was a decision that Barrisonia acknowledged some 3 or 4 years ago when Robin, a local artist...
But you had brought it up recently, and I noticed that right after that, there started to be a lot more people on the streets vending.
I think it
did cause some loosening. I really do.
Well, in which case, unfortunately, it then caused this sidewalk shrinkage.
There's always a backlash.
Apparently.
That's how politics work.
And there is news, by the way, around the sidewalk shrinkage law. I've heard sort of rumors that Don Lane, vice mayor, and Micah Posner, council member, both of whom opposed this law, or this series of laws, in September and October, are trying to put together a behind-the-scenes cloakroom discussion. I was invited to attend, but then not told where to go. So
did they hold it on Thursday night?
that I don't know. But I did. I gave Don my thoughts on that by email. Not that he pays any attention to them, and I try not to pay too much attention to him, because one of the great delusions and one of the great temptations is to believe that talking to people in power makes any sense.
Yeah, but they always lie to you, too. They promise
it's
you.
It's better to spend your time talking to your fellow associates.
Another thing for the coffee protest, we could expand it into the people that shrunk the sidewalk. We, start putting, who the city pictures of the city council who actually did it, so maybe they won't get elected. Because a lot of people don't like the fact that Morgani's not down there anymore.
Yeah, I was wondering if I heard it said yesterday, one of the things that we did notice in the protest, and I think it may be on the tape, if we ever get to it, it may not happen until Sunday, is that when I do another show at 9:30, is that that Scott Collins, who's the assistant to the assistant city manager, I guess he's Tina Shule's assistant. Tina's the assistant city manager.
assistant.
His name is on a lot of this crap that goes into the city council.
He's trying to get up to the assistant level.
He's a nice guy. He was helpful. He tried his best to make information accessible to me during the task force days.
Well, maybe we should
get
him an assistant.
He gets too much assistance as it is. But what recently, of course, the big controversy with Scott and what I called him out for yesterday on the sidewalk was he was responsible for stating that he made a number of claims about the bike distribution in the police department's interference with it and taking the bikes away from the bike church.
And the children that would have been, getting those. Poor children didn't get bikes.
That's right. I mean,
That's what our tax dollars get spent on, depriving children of bikes.
Disadvantaged. Well, it's mainly so the police department has its own vendetta
against
the bike church.
Well, because they're right next door to the Sub Rosa.
And for whatever reason. And what Scott Collins... I could find it. I may not be on here. I think it's... I'm looking for the... he actually made a rather strong and specific series of claims about what the bike church's mistakes, errors, omissions were. in dealing with bikes that justified the police department's
intervention. I have to make a villain out of him somehow when you're the villain.
And he, what did he do? He made the following statement. And this is a live quote from his actual words before city council in his staff report. It wasn't written in the staff report, but this is what he said, because I spent some time transcribing it. And it says, City Line staff had issued, you know, a number of complaints about from multiple departments that found the program was burdensome to staff, talking about the bike distribution program, that bikes were going regularly from leftover bikes that the police department couldn't deal with. They gave them to the bike church. Scott continued, typically requiring four or five staff members from different departments to execute the distribution. In addition to that, there were inconsistencies in terms of when the drop-off and then coordination would occur, which further impacted staff time, but also the ability to manage the storage facilities. And public works staff had to haul off unwanted bikes and parts at the city's expense and time after the distribution took place. And there was no established point of contact at this organization to handle these concerns.
What? They didn't have a leader?
This is what he said. So, in other words, here the following were his complaints. There were complaints about multiple departments that found the program was burdensome, inconsistencies in terms of when the drop-off and then coordination would occur, ability to manage storage facilities, hauling off underwater bikes and parts at the city's expense, and no established point of contact. These were five or six things.
And it's all bullshit.
So,
what
well,
I heard.
I wanted to find out what his basis for saying this was. Yeah. I mean, did he get it from the police department? Did he consult a Ouija board?
All right.
You know,
where did he get
did
it?
Did he do some? Well, I asked him, give me the documents that you base this on. I made a public records act request.
Oh, okay. Good.
And the response
was?
The response was, no public records whatsoever exist.
So he pulled it out of his ass.
So then I talked to this guy. I said, Scott, can you tell me where you got this from? Because maybe you got it from verbal conversations. If so, who did you talk to? No response. And so when
he's
passed
a
on,
lying official. Maybe we should get him fired.
You know, I'm afraid I'm reaching the point where I'm losing my patience with Scott Collins. I essentially expressed myself, you know, saying the kinds of things you were saying. You don't want disadvantaged youth to get bikes. You want to shovel them all over to the what are they doing? The teen center.
He wants to make the
police
handle
them and put them up in auctions.
Look like less of the villains than they really are.
Right. He wants to cover the ass of the police department.
Yeah.
At least that is. Seems to be the only interpretation I can find.
Exactly. There it is, the smoking gun.
But, you know, I think, you know, I'm continuing to try to find ways to make this clearer to the community because I think that's very important. What we're talking about now, though, and listening to here on the tape is a woman who was selling nice scarves downtown. I don't know if she was quite making a living at it, but at one point I think she was at least getting enough to stay occasionally indoors. She was sleeping in her car. Then she got a ticket for sleeping in her car. The tickets for sleeping in your car are $157. The tickets for vending are $190-some, and the tickets for not moving along are $321.
Wow!
This is if you want to go without going to court, pay it off as a bail, and just let the ticket then just be resolved that way. So, this is the discussion. She's responding to this. She was very outspoken on the issue, but then she found this increased the harassment she felt.
That's right. Activists get targeted.
And she was also concerned that information was revealed that had them snooping around more into other issues that made it more difficult for her.
They want to make her a villain, just like the bike church got made a villain there by the assistant to the assistant to the assistant.
You know, I think he was more or less just trying to produce something that would cover the police department, Collins. But anyway, let's hear a little more of what she had to say.
She's giving me contradictory info, blah, blah, blah. Whatever. I wanted to say to her today because I saw her again, and it's just like...
And she's talking about the clerk at the courthouse where she was trying to get information about bail, about getting a continuance. I think that's what she's going to try to do, is get a continuance at her court hearing, which is coming up again March 25th at 8:30 a.m. in Department 1 for those who want to go. And again, it probably is a kind of a, you know, maybe a wasted trip because she'll probably be granted a continuance, one continuance at least. Usually get that. The best way to get a continuance for those who want is to say you're looking for an attorney. Not that you necessarily are or that you are likely to find one, but that's...
Attorneys get continuances up the year.
Correct.
You know those 10 minutes that I annoyed you with my life? Well, my life is a complete annoyance of dealing with you and the court and these tickets and paperwork and judges and dismissals and da-da-da-da because I'm being criminalized for barely doing anything,
for
you know?
For existing.
For existing, you know, and just... And actually, on top of everything, I'm trying to support myself and you're criminalizing it. And now that I'm just bumming around, it's like, well, geez, this is easy, you know, just have people give you free money and go eat free food every day, and not to say that that's, you know, something about that, but at the same time, it's like so much harder to try and like actually make my own living in a decent, honest way. So which side are we on with the law here? Is it, are you wrong for just mooching off the system, or are you wrong for just not, you know, for trying to do it some way that you...
Being productive.
Yeah, there's so much hypocrisy. It's just ridiculous. And my life is just spun out of control because of it. So thank you very much, court lady. I'm sorry I'm messing up your 10 minutes today, but this is my whole freaking life getting messed up, you know?
I'd like to know what kind of contradictory information you got, and I'll take that off tape. Apparently, what I just heard from Kate was that, getting back to your life situation, Kate, which is that your lifestyle has changed because you essentially have been stopped or punished or penalized or intimidated from selling scarves down here. There are various reasons why you're not selling scarves right now, but is it fair to say that the police pressure has put you in a position where you actually now are then become more dependent on food services and so forth?
I don't want to go. I just really...
There are various reasons Kate's having trouble going on record. Some of it has to do with her defense and the cases. Others has to do with personal issues that she prefers not to talk about now. But one thing Kate did say is, and she could say it again if she wants, because I'm still standing here next to her, is that she has been forced to sleep in an unsafe place in her vehicle because of the danger of sleeping tickets inside the city limits. And apparently the confusion or, I don't know what it's called, I think... There's Big John across the street. He's your security guard, but not your favorite CSO Barnett.
I'm okay with him. Yep. Ottoman Empire.
Oh, good, good. You two are okay? Good.
Well, he's a...
So you also have the problem that you, even though you're on... You thought you were on the waiting list. You haven't gotten confirmation yet to the poly loft as you are. And then you're told that even if you are, you have to be in a situation where the armory was full that night, which, of course, is contrary to the wording of the law. So, problems everywhere. And here you are. Now you're in a situation where actually you're panhandling on the streets. And this is something that has been... It's been discussed by other folks in other cities how what happens is that people are reduced to a condition of poverty where they are, and then they fall out of poverty into homelessness, but they're never able to rise out of poverty because there's a whole series of criminalization checks that impede independent vendors like yourself, people trying to rise up out of poverty. They can't get into housing, so they have no place to really start from. They try to be in their cars. They're faced with sleeping tickets or bogus camping tickets. So it's a system that perpetuates poverty.
And I want to investigate, because we're reaching the end of the two-hour show here, if I can, I'm probably not going to get anywhere with this, I'm going to try to call our old friend Steve Plaich and see if he can give us some insight into this law that you're looking at there, Free.
Yeah, the text of the law clearly says if the armory's full or you're on the waiting list, the ticket should be dismissed by the city attorney. That's part B of... 6.36.055.
And there seems to be a new interpretation at the Homeless Lack of Services Center around that, or at least that was the information Kate passed on to
us. Well, the title to this may be misleading. It says citations issued when the winter shelter
title is
full,
but
the title is not the law. The law is the text.
The law states that if you're on a waiting list, they dismiss the tickets.
Yes. It's an or. It's an either or, not and.
Your call has been forwarded to an automatic voice message system.
Oh, dear. Looks
Steve
like
Plaich.
Steve is not available.
He's not
again.
Available. At the tone, please record your message.
It's
when you have finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Like Steve is never available. Steve, it's too bad that a homeless advocate like yourself is not available when there's a show on homeless activism, and we have some really serious questions.
You have been very hard on him, Robert.
I have been somewhat harsh on you, Steve, but you're tough, you're rough, you can take it, you've been around the bend.
He's tall?
Yeah, you're tall, you're good looking. The reason we're calling is, again, we've just reviewed the law, Municipal Code 6.36055.
I saw an email from him, and he agrees. The law does say it's an either or.
I've asked you to determine from your sources inside the city whether tickets are being dismissed or whether they're not being dismissed because of this bogus claim that the armory also has to be full and you have to be on a waiting list. Not that any of this stuff is constitutional at all to begin with. But please give a call to 423-4833 so I can inform my public, those three people who are listening.
Nine.
Nine people. Very good. That, you know, you are at least doing your darndest to at least address this issue one way or another. Thank you. And my number is 423-4833. That's the Huff line and also my phone, as you know.
So, you also have some listeners that aren't in the street.
Yeah, I mean, I think the whole sleeping ban thing is not just, the idea, the thing they cooked up in response to your brothers and others working at the Peace Camp 2010 and
right.
creating...
And Ed's argument that it's harassment to make them go and get a letter and all that shit.
They created the fact that, you know... Yeah. That
when you can simply call.
Nobody understands your interjections free, I don't think, unless you want to clarify them.
Well, I mean, the police could simply call and see if the shelters are full and then not harass you. No, they'd rather harass you, make you go and prove that the shelters were full.
Well, there's no indication that even if the shelters are full, you won't get a ticket. And there's no indication even the shelters are full, you won't get convicted. Because the problem is that in order to prove a necessity defense, you have to, in theory, prove six different affirmative items. And it's a complicated
defense.
The
burden's on you instead of the reverse.
And although you and I may fantasize about let's subpoena Monica Martinez, the mistress, duchess, princess of the Homeless Lack of Services Center.
Well, it doesn't hurt.
Let's
bring
them
all
in.
If they're going to waste everybody else's time, make them come into court every day.
The fact is that it just doesn't happen. People don't do it.
People don't do it, no. Most homeless don't care.
And therefore, to propose it is to propose something that is fundamentally empty, although theoretically possible. That's the point.
Well, that's why they've left it. You have one narrow legal course to care that they know no one will go, and so therefore they're able to fuck
everybody. But I would encourage people who want more information to either contact the city attorney directly or perhaps waste 50 cents or perhaps just use your cell phone if you have a phone or a landline and contact Steve Plaich, who claims expertise on this issue. He's talked a lot about his legal credentials.
I think he's worked with the list and the people up
there. He claims to have a contact with the assistant city attorney who's dealing with the homeless tickets. Obviously, it's time for us to forget about Steve, just like we should forget about the ACLU. And just proceed, because he's not helping, at least in this respect. And to sort of say, you're not helping, is, you know...
What can we do, Robert?
...becomes superfluous. We can go to the city attorney ourselves.
Oh, well.
You can call the city attorney's office and ask. I'd like to know. I have a friend who has a ticket. Will tickets be dismissed if...
Maybe we could do that after the
you
protest.
You can also call Micah Posner, the city council member, at 420-5020. That's the city council number. And leave a message that says, I want you to find out if tickets are being dismissed. I want you to find out how many tickets are not being dismissed. I want you to get specific stats on this. This is a civil rights issue and a homeless issue, and you've talked about being concerned about this. 420-5020 if you want to talk to either Don Lane, Pamela Comstock, or Micah Posner. So that just about takes us to the end of the show. Free, any reports from the street that you think we need to know about?
Not really.
I know.
Are we doing a protest again Wednesday?
Well, we're going to be talking about it on Saturday at our sort of mini Huff meeting. We're going to have a mini Huff meeting at the post office steps about 4:30, halfway through the Food Now Bombs meal, to sort of cook up what we exactly want to do.
What we really need at this point, if people want to come, is bring a chair, because it's legal to sit in a lot more places if you have a chair.
Well, not at this meeting. We don't need a chair.
No, not
steps.
At the meeting, but at
yeah,
Wednesday.
Yeah, you've got a lot
afternoon.
Of ideas, Free, but again...
Because there isn't a lot of chairs.
Well, where there's a chair, there's a chairman. You know that. I'll always be willing to step in.
Well, as you know, if you sit on the sidewalk in a certain place, you get a ticket. But if you're in a chair in the same spot, you don't get a ticket.
That's what I understand. Now, will the police respect that? That's an interesting question. I can't guarantee that. But that's, again, the nature of the sitting ban, 9.50.012, for those of you who like to follow the details of all this crap, which we have to deal with.
And there's new crap coming every year.
Yeah, it's always exciting. There's always new stuff. City Council yesterday met. I don't have a report for you on the city council's activities yesterday. I didn't go. Day before yesterday, actually. But I do have the new, as I said, Street Spirit. I'm going to try to get the library to put it back on the shelves. I haven't heard back from them. They were supposed to call me, but they did not. We're also going to be investigating disability discrimination in the library. We have some activists who are restless and want to be doing things. And if you are restless and want to help with HUFF, give a call to the HUFF line, 423-HUFF, 423-H-U-F-F, 423-4833, and we can talk. Maybe you can help us out. Maybe we can give you some information, maybe you can provide information.
And the more we do, the better. I mean, I find the meetings kind of just get divisive, and the actions are just more fun.
And Free is a man for action, and I commend him for that. So I think that that's pretty much all we got here.